Yo, what is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Overstated NBA Podcast. It is Brett and Steve. We are back at you. We are going to do the Pacific Division. We got the Suns, Golden State, Lakers, Clippers, and the Court DeFoya, I suck, Sacramento Kings. Oh, did I just say that? I'm sorry. Or is Court DeFoya a Golden State fan? We'll never know. But first, before we get into any of that, I don't think we wasted our time. It gave us a little bit of content over the summer, but Kevin Durant has decided to stay with the Brooklyn Nets. Brooklyn did not get an offer that they liked, and as I have stated all along, Brooklyn had all the leverage even in the world, even after Kevin Durant's trade demand to get the GM Sean Marks and the head coach Steve Nash fired. He's signed for 4 more years, and that is very tough to trade, especially when you're a team that's going to have to give up a lot, and Brooklyn should demand a lot because Kevin Durant, depending on where you have him on your list, is probably one of the 10 to 12 greatest players in NBA history. So I posted about it today, Brett. I think you liked it. Brooklyn definitely has a very interesting squad coming in. I think a lot of their success is going to depend on Ben Simmons. I think we've already seen with Kyrie and Kevin Durant, they can win a lot of regular season games. I'm going to guess, just assume. Who knows? Kyrie's going to play most of the games this year. There's no COVID guidelines where he's going to have to sit out. And if Ben Simmons can stay healthy, this team could be very dangerous in the postseason, and they can even possibly win a title. I think they need to get a little bit bigger on the front line. I don't think they can sustain playing Ben Simmons at the five for a lot of minutes, especially in the regular season. I don't think Steve Nash wants to do that, but I'm happy. I think it's good for the NBA. We can finally put this to rest for now. Who knows what'll happen a month or two, but Kevin Durant is coming back to the Brooklyn Nets. Brett, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm glad he is, man. We talked about it a couple podcasts ago where it was like, my thing was like, first of all, like the validity of that report from Shams. And then second, is Joe Tsai going to buy it fully based on whatever discussion they've had internally? Does he really believe that ultimatum to be true? Does he really believe KD is saying, if you don't get rid of these guys, I'm out? And I think in a sense, he called his bluff because look, KD wants to hoop. And like you sort of alluded to, it's not an entirely bad situation in Brooklyn. I mean, I think if you look at some of these teams that he could have potentially been traded to, you know, how many of them really project as being better than the Nets if Kyrie and Ben Simmons are there, which is going to be the case, it appears. So it's not a bad situation. So I don't know what to make of that report, like whether or not KD really did say that in such explicit terms. You got to assume it was true, but I don't know. Maybe it was Rich Kleiman angling for that GM job. I don't know. But whatever the case is, I'm glad that, you know, Marks and Nash and Tsai and KD all got together and worked it out and are moving forward. Because like you said in your post, I mean, that they have a damn good team. I think they're, you know, they're not like the title favorites or anything. But like, I think they probably should be considered a top 4 or 5 team in the East at the very least, with a higher ceiling than that.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you. I think that they could. I think they're still maybe a move or two away, and a lot of this is going to depend on Ben Simmons' health. Is he available to play? Throw in Kyrie and that factor, and kind of his hesitation to not re-sign the max with Brooklyn to kind of get to the LA Lakers. We'll see what happens. It's going to be fascinating to watch, but I'm just happy that we can finally stop talking about it. We can talk about like actual, you know, basketball, because I do agree with you, man. I think the East is really fun now, especially when you look at the top five of Boston, Milwaukee, Philly, Brooklyn, Miami still hanging around. You know, they're always going to be tough. They got the best coach in the NBA, and then throw in Chicago. I know you're very high on Toronto. We'll get to them in our kind of our season preview, but they should be a lot stronger. I just feel like the East is good for the East, and it's a very, very, very strong, you know, I think 1 through 7 conference.
Yeah. Yeah. The East is a beast. No question. And just to get back to Brooklyn, like I just want to say, I'm glad that Nash is still there for now. I think I've described him this way in the past. Like, he's a high upside coach. You know what I mean? Like, okay, maybe so far he hasn't wowed us in 2 seasons. Obviously, there's been a lot of circumstances that have been out of his control, and I think he's done an admirable job. But I've always seen him as a high upside coach. And I don't think anything's changed with that. Like, he could be great. A guy with that kind of basketball mind. Same with Jason Kidd, high upside coach. Like, we talk so much about upside with players. I think we should recognize it more in coaches. And I think Nash fits that description. So I'm glad we get to see him continue to evolve as a coach with the kind of talent that Brooklyn has. Like, who knows how last season would have gone if it wasn't for the vaccine mandate, right? And KD getting injured. There was a couple of things that went down that really changed their season. Everything might have been different. So you just have to hope as a basketball fan, as long as you don't hate the Nets, that things go well in that regard this season, that they can just stay healthy and hoop. Because if you've got that core of Kyrie, KD, Ben Simmons, it's really interesting. Like, the Ben Simmons at the five stuff is intriguing. You know, there's a lot of, like, quote unquote death lineups that they can run. A lot of fun configurations with him at the five and KD at the four, and just, you know, basically him surrounded by shooters, him in sort of that Draymond role that we've talked about him potentially playing for a long time now. And I think finally, maybe we'll see it. The Nets certainly have the personnel beyond just those big three. When you look at, like, Joe Harris, Patty Mills, Seth Curry, Cam Thomas, I mean, they've got some serious, serious shooters on that team. And like you said, you think they're kind of one move away. Do you agree with me in that if they were to make another move, and I think you already kind of alluded to this, it would be to bring in kind of like a big, like some size, like a banger.
Yeah. Maybe Claxton can kind of fulfill that role. I mean, we'll see.
He's so but thin, just, though. You know what I mean? Like, he's a certain type of center. Yeah. He's a great rim protector and everything.
I just look at the teams that they're going to have to face. I mean, obviously, Giannis in Milwaukee and with Lopez and Bobby Portis is a no-brainer. You throw in some of Boston's guys. I mean, we'll see how Al Horford looks. But if Time Lord can, you know, fingers crossed, if he can stay healthy, he's another one. I mean, Miami with Bam. So, I mean, I just don't.
Philly with Embiid.
Oh, yeah, of course. Philly with Embiid.
The Cavs guys are huge. Like, I think you need size to do well in the East. I think you nailed it by saying that that's kind of their one glaring weakness.
Well, I just don't think that you want to necessarily have Ben Simmons play the five, you know, for an extended period of time, right, especially in the regular season. In the playoffs, I think you can get away with it. And let's also be honest about this team. If we're being completely honest, yeah, on paper, they should be, you know, a top four team. They should be a finals contender. But we know, or I shouldn't say we know, but based on past history, Kyrie's going to miss a bunch of games. Kevin Durant's going to miss a lot of games. Ben Simmons, for the most part, except for the first year of his career and then whatever the hell happened this past year, he's been pretty durable. So if he can come back and do that and fulfill that role, I just think that they need their one move away. And that's, again, that's not to say that, you know, KD and Kyrie can't get hot in the playoffs. I mean, and I'll push back. I'm not as sold as you are on Steve Nash. I think that he might have to be an assistant somewhere. He might have to kind of go someplace else so we can actually see how good of a coach he really is. But to your point, hey, my Milwaukee Bucks won the title, but let's be honest, if Kyrie doesn't sprain his ankle, I mean, we're probably looking at Steve Nash as an NBA championship winning coach. So, I mean, it's crazy, the margins in the NBA, but it's going to be fascinating to see this team. They are instantly must-watch television. I think I saw, I could be wrong, I don't have it out in front of me, I think Brooklyn plays the Pelicans right away to start the season. So we're going to see Ben Simmons back on the court. We're going to see Zion back on the court. I mean, it's just the NBA is just – it's off-season drama 24/7, and it's a lot of fun for us to talk about. But I can't absolutely wait to see the Brooklyn Nets play basketball. It's because, you know, Kyrie Irving, if you take away all the off-season bullshit, and it's a lot of off-the-court bullshit that he goes through, and a lot of it he puts on himself, a lot of it he doesn't put on himself, but there's no doubt about it. He's one of the most skilled players in NBA history. You have Kevin Durant offensively, maybe one of the best scoring, not even big men, but scoring NBA players in NBA history, one of the best. Ben Simmons, when healthy, is just a defensive force. You have Seth Curry who can shoot it. Joe Harris, if he can stay healthy, he can shoot it. Like, this team should be, again, on paper, fun, and it's going to be up to Steve Nash. And, you know, we've seen him, as you mentioned, he's dealt with a lot of weird and interesting stuff these first 2 years, and we'll see what he does.
We just can't know like what he is quite yet as a coach. Like, I really think coaching is very hard to evaluate. From where I stand, it's hard to know, at least in such a short period of time, such a small sample. So like I said, I'm not like all in on Nash or anything. As a coach, I'm not sure if he's the guy, but I'm glad he gets another shot at it in a hopefully healthy season. And
it's interesting though, you know, what I would love to know, and who knows if we'll find out on NBA Media Day, who knows if this is going to leak out. I think I was listening to Bill Simmons' podcast, and it's pretty clear that Woj goes to Sean Marks and Shams goes to somebody in Kevin Durant's circle. Like, it's very, very clear. Like, that's what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, what was that? 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, it was Sean Marks and Steve Nash need to go. Apparently they met, they had a big meeting, and now everyone is on the same page. Like, I would be curious to know what changed Kevin Durant's mind. I think a lot of people will tell you that, oh, Brooklyn would have traded him. You know, they would have agreed with Kevin Durant. They would have given him what he wanted, but Brooklyn also needed a lot back. No team wanted to do that because Kevin Durant signed for 4 years. Does he want to play with a certain team? You know, all that bullshit aside, did Kevin Durant just say, hey, or maybe there was an agreement, why don't you play this year with us? We'll see how the season goes, and then we'll go from there. I have no idea. I just think it's a soap opera, man. The Brooklyn Nets, ever since those two guys signed there and they got Kenny Atkinson fired, it has just been a nonstop soap opera. And get your popcorn ready because I'm here for it.
It's good for the league, man. I mean, I don't think KD holding up free agency and the entire offseason for like a month plus maybe isn't good for the league. But I think all in all, the Brooklyn Nets and the drama and KD being there and Kyrie being there, it's good for the league. It's good for media people. It's good for podcasters like us. And, you know, as far as what exactly went down, I think there's a pretty good chance we'll find out the specifics eventually, probably from KD, depending on how it reflects on him. But I wouldn't be surprised. He's a pretty honest guy. And I think maybe even once he's out of the league, we might find out more about a lot of the things he's been a part of in the NBA. But then just a quick couple shout outs before we move on to the meat of the podcast. Dayron Sharpe is a guy I just wanted to mention because, you know, he's I think he's 20 years old, backup center for the Nets. They drafted him in 2021 with the 29th pick out of North Carolina. But he's the kind of – he's a big body, very physical player, very aggressive player. Like, he's the type of big that they need. A really nice, like, yin to Claxton's yang. I don't know if he's ready. You know, again, he's only 20 years old, but I think he's about 6'10", 260, 270, big, big athletic dude. And I like him. So I he's a guy, they might already have what they need as far as that center. It just depends how far along he is in his development and his readiness for a larger role. So he's a guy to keep an eye on. And the other guy I would definitely keep an eye on, is Cam Thomas, absolute bucket getter extraordinaire. Saw him up close at Summer League a couple times. He looked unstoppable there in that environment, obviously. But he had some really good moments for them as a rookie. And, you know, he gives you a lot of shooting, but he also gives you a lot of shot creation and a lot more size than a guy like Seth Curry and a lot more athleticism than a guy like, you know, Joe Harris or Patty Mills. He's an interesting guy. He's really strong. I think he's about 6'4", 225. So he's got an NBA body in terms of strength, and he can certainly get buckets. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him emerge as almost being on par with Curry and Mills in terms of his role on the team, but it'll be interesting to see how that rotation sort of shakes out just because they have quite a few guys like that are sort of just shooters, instant offense, kind of like undersized guards. But I'd keep an eye on Cam Thomas. I think he's a special scoring talent, but yeah, that's we should probably move on. I know you're probably ready to, but yeah, we're moving on in the podcast, and we're moving on in general. And I think that was maybe even the wording on that report, is that the Nets are moving forward together, whatever it was. But I'm glad they are, man. They're gonna be a good team as long as they can stay healthy.
Yeah, I think so too. So let's go on to, you know, kind of this offseason preview. And I think the Phoenix Suns, I think you could look at the Phoenix Suns last season and say that they had one of the most impressive regular seasons we've seen in some time. and they probably had one of the most disappointing playoff runs we've seen in some time. Very, very weird season for them. Let's just start with some of the players that they lost. I believe that Aaron Holiday's gone, JaVale McGee's gone. They did sign Damian Lee from the Golden State Warriors. They re-signed Bismack Biyombo. I'll just say they re-signed Devin Booker to a four-year, $225 million extension that does not start until the 2024-2025 season. And then DeAndre Ayton, right? We had a bunch of podcasts, a lot of conversation from this time last year all the way up until the Phoenix Suns matched his offer sheet that he got from the Indiana Pacers. So he's back. That should be good. I want to give I know we usually don't do grades, but I almost want to give Phoenix like a B plus A just based on what they did. But then when you just factor in the whole DeAndre Ayton stuff and how that – I think that affected them in the playoffs more than they'll probably ever admit. Kind of like a C plus. Like, it's just, why didn't you sign this guy last year when you could have? It's just very bizarre. But all in all, they got their core back. They're good to go. I'm a little disappointed. I mean, I know that their options are pretty limited. I would have liked to have seen them get some sort of backup point guard that, you know, maybe you can play Chris Paul 25 minutes a game and kind of just ease him into the season and then just slowly kind of build him up until the playoffs, because, you know, we've seen it time and time again. You love CP3. I love CP3. Everywhere he goes, he turns his teams into winning teams. He's a leader. He's a winner. But for whatever reason in the playoffs, man, this dude just – the last couple years especially, he's broken down. He's gotten hurt. Like, I think they need to limit his minutes. That's the only other thing that I would like to have seen them do. Get a guard in there that, you know, you can actually play, you know, 28, 29 minutes a game, and you can kind of ease some of that burden on Chris Paul.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think campaign, like, he deserves some credit for the player he's turned himself into.
Right, after
the story with him, it wasn't even that he wasn't good. I mean, he just had some really, really rough injury luck. Like, I think this is the player he was always supposed to become. I mean, as far as backup point guards go, I mean, I'd say he's above middle of the pack. Like, he's decent. And then also Booker, you know, has some point guard skills. Like, Booker can definitely run that offense. Like, when CP3 is out, we do see more of that. So, yeah.
Real quick, I don't mean to cut you off, man, but we just did – I don't remember – I'm sorry, man. I'm a father of two, dude. I'm just fucking beat.
I feel you.
Dude, I went to the Packer game on Friday, had a birthday party Saturday. Sunday had a fantasy. Each night this past weekend, I didn't get to bed till like 1 in the morning. I am just dragging ass. Anyways, though, we're here for you guys. I'm drinking a little bit. I'm getting some energy back. We're here for you. We just did a podcast about the Memphis Grizzlies, right? And we were talking about how John Morant missed all that time. Look how good they were. And we talked about their backup point guard situation and Tyus Jones. You and I both were surprised that he went back there because he was supposed to command a shit ton of money. I'm not saying like Phoenix needs to replicate someone like Tyus Jones, but someone like that where they can just plug in, right? And the team just does not miss a beat. You know what I'm saying? But like,
yeah.
I don't know where they would have found that. I would have liked to have seen them make more of an effort to kind of fill that role. And maybe they did. Maybe we just don't know about it. But I think that should have been outside of DeAndre Ayton, which should have happened last year. I think it was a no-brainer that Devin Booker was going to sign that extension. I would have liked to have seen them that be their focus.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think in a perfect world, you'd like a better guy there. Payne is not the most consistent. He has some really nice moments, but he also has some really head-scratching moments. Yeah, I mean, I think somebody like Monty Morris or like Ricky Rubio or Ish Smith, like, you know what I mean? Somebody in that mold would be a little bit better. I think we'll see Booker, though, just even in general as his career goes on, become more of a primary ball handler. I don't think he'll ever be like a pure point guard or anything, but he's got, you know, he's improved a lot in that regard. And yeah, man, I mean, solid offseason. Like, they pretty much just, they brought almost everybody back except JaVale. I'm glad they finally, you know, locked things in with Ayton. I think what he did in their finals run in 2021 should have been more than enough to say, hey, this guy is invaluable. We don't sniff the finals without him.
Yeah, it's so weird, dude. It's just weird.
You're right. I mean, you know, like as a Bucks fan, like, you understand how important he was to them in that playoff run. I mean, he was huge. And
not even that. It's just like, why? I don't understand. Like, you have this clearly you have this limited window with Chris Paul. Like, I'm sorry, I love CP3 again, but like, he's getting older. He's old for NBA standards.
Yeah.
He's been in the league since what, 05? Yeah, he was with the Andrew Bogut draft. 2005, he's been in the league. He's about 6'1". Like, that's a lot for them. And just like, they don't, I wish I could tell you who they drafted, but they really don't draft anybody. Like, they're, if you can read that article, I believe, wasn't it Brett? Was it ESPN that did, who wrote, somebody wrote an article where like Phoenix just doesn't value like first round picks and they don't like it. They're just a very weird organization that does a bunch of weird shit that I don't understand. Like, it's just very weird.
But it's worked out pretty well for them. And I don't even know if they had a pick in the last draft. Maybe they did. I'm not sure.
They did not.
They did not. I mean, then they had like, they had the Jalen Smith pick in, I think, 2020, and then Cam Johnson maybe the year before that. But like, yeah, other than that though, I mean, they traded for Bridges on draft night. Obviously they had the number one pick with Ayton. Like, I mean, they're homegrown to an extent, but that was kind of, you know, now they're not really in a position to do that, obviously, because they're a very good team. They'd be picking late if they do have a pick. I know they gave up a first rounder for Chris Paul. So yeah, they do sort of operate out of a different mindset. I don't know that they got better necessarily, but like you said, they were pretty damn good last season in the regular
64
season.
64-18.
Yeah, I mean, because of the disappointing postseason that you mentioned, it's easy to forget just how dominant they were in the regular season. Pretty much like wire to wire, the best team in the NBA. So,
right, I'm just going to give you this idea, right? Because we talked about the East, just to tell you how dominant Phoenix was. And again, this is last year in the East. Miami was the one seed. Between them and the six-seeded Chicago Bulls, there were 7 games apart. The Phoenix Suns, the difference between the number one ranked Phoenix Suns and the number two ranked Memphis Grizzlies was 8 games. Eight games, dude. Like that.
Yeah. And Memphis was
that dominant and that good.
And Memphis was really fucking good. Like a 56 win two seed is nothing to scoff at.
And they were 8 games back.
Yeah. 64, man. Not a lot of teams have done that. I don't have the list in front of me, but that's like, you're probably talking like 10, 12, 15 at most teams in NBA history have won that many games.
And let's go a step further. The NBA champs were 11 games back. And even though I just said the East was a lot more, I think the East was just a better conference, but that's neither here nor there. The Phoenix Suns were 64-18 and the number one seed in Miami Heat were 53-29. Like, Phoenix was good. Like, they were really, really good in the regular season.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, Ayton could have played better in the playoffs. I don't think Chris was 100%. They just have to figure that out because they've got it. They've got everything they need. And one thing I will mention, it does hurt to lose McGee. I think he was you know where I stand on JaVale McGee.
That's the best backup big in NBA history.
I think he was the best backup big in the NBA last season.
Hey man, I even wrote his stats down just for you. Under 16 minutes a game, 9.7 rebounds.
Well, if I do some quick math, that's like 22 and 14 for 36 or something.
That's pretty good.
No, he was great though. But when Ayton was out, like he really stepped it up. He really was great for them. Like, all jokes aside, although it's not a joke, I do stand by what I said on the last episode. But it does hurt to lose him. But you know who they're getting back is Dario Saric.
They are.
Like, he's kind of a forgotten man. But he's a nice player, and I think he's still only 27, 28 years old. So that kind of provides a different look for them as more of a stretch big. And then they did bring back Biombo, who played well for them as well last season when he had opportunities. They're almost like a system, you know what I mean? Like, where you can plug in, like when JaVale was starting at center for them, people were like, I don't know, maybe that was even part of the reluctance to bring back Ayton, was like, wait a second, this guy's been just as good as Ayton was. And then even when Biombo got in, it was like, whoa, Bismack Biombo. And I think when you see stuff like that, like Biombo, who people didn't even know how he was still in the league, and all of a sudden he at like age whatever he is now, playing at that level, I think that speaks to a system. It's like the New England Patriots, you know. It's like you could almost plug anybody in and they're going to be the best version of themselves, or like or as long as you find somebody who sort of fits the right role in that system, like they're going to excel as long as they're the type of player for that role. So yeah. So maybe that was part of it. I don't understand it. The Ayton thing, like, it just seemed like they were unsure of him as a 30 something million dollar a year player. And I thought it was clear as day. I know you stand with me on that, but I'm glad they matched that and he's there. And then they brought Monty Williams back on a multi-year extension. So he'll be there for a while. Coach of the year, well-deserved. Yeah, they're going to be tough. They're going to be right at the top of the West.
They're a good team, man. I hope that this was just like something weird happened in the postseason. I hope they can come back strong. And yeah, I think they had a good offense.
Look at the Bucks. Like it could be, you know, along the lines of Milwaukee in 2020 compared to 21. You know, they could take a similar jump. Milwaukee was another all-time great regular season team, and they had hiccups in the playoffs, but then they come back the next year and they win a chip. Wow. Phoenix could do that. I wouldn't rule that out.
That's not their fault. They could easily be three-time champs right now if not for COVID and the bubble and some other things. But we're going to wait. We're not going to talk about Rookie of the Year, Marshawn Beauchamp. We're going to talk about that. That's on the next week's pod. I think they're really good, though. I think Phoenix is set up really good. I mean, we're going to move on to the Warriors. Tyrese Halliburton would look good in a Phoenix Suns uniform, but they took Jalen Smith, but that's neither here nor there. We'll go to the Golden State Warriors, who, I mean, one of their biggest fans. This is Cort DeFoya's favorite team. He's a Golden State super fan. He loves them. He's been there from day one. They had an interesting offseason. I might go on a little bit of a rant here, Brett. I don't know if I will, but I think – I don't know. We'll kind of see what happens. They drafted who – if you would have probably asked Nathan or anybody a year ago, a top 10 pick in Patrick Baldwin Jr., shout out to Milwaukee. I think he's going to be really good. They signed Dante DiVincenzo. I think he's going to be really good. They signed Jamichael Green. They also re-signed Kevin Looney, who, you know, that's my boy, dude, right down the road from my house. That's my guy. They did lose Gary Payton II, and they did lose Otto Porter Jr. I thought this was a great season considering I think Kevin Looney is wildly important to that team. And I think if they would have lost him, it would have been a very, very bad offseason for them. All things considered, though, I think they had a really, really solid offseason. I really can't complain. I thought they nailed the NBA draft with their first-round pick with Patrick Baldwin. He went to the most perfect spot. I know that he went to UWM. There's a lot of interesting stuff that went down there. His dad was a coach, and they were just horrible. He got hurt like 5 games into the season. Don't sleep on that kid, man. He has the potential to be very, very good. Like, he's good. He shoots the shit out of the ball. Could be Jordan Poole-like. He's legit. I love Dante. You know that's my guy, NBA champion, Dante DiVincenzo. He's going to be really good for that team. I think it was a solid offseason, man. I really do. And Golden State Warrior fans, first of all, y'all are fucking spoiled. Second of all, freaking out about Gary Payton II. I know he was wildly important to you guys. I get it. But, dude, the way you guys hype up Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody, the next Pippen and Jordan, like, you guys should be fine. Let these guys play more. I thought they had a solid offseason, Brett. Klay is coming back next season with a full offseason. He should be healthy, ready to go. Draymond, like, they're fine. Golden State did fine. I thought they had a fine offseason. What do you think?
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. I mean, I don't think they got any worse. Like, the Gary Payton thing does hurt, but like you kind of said, I mean, that just means larger roles for...
Oh, I've heard, man. That's all, Brett, I'm telling you, on Twitter, all Cort DeFoya, Super Warrior fan, that's all they want to tell me is Jonathan Kuminga is the next Michael Jordan. Okay, well, what's the loss to Gary Payton II then?
Yeah, and Moody... That good?
Let him play.
Yeah, Moody's got a lot of potential defensively, exactly, and obviously he can really shoot the ball too. Gary was valuable for them, but again, it's kind of like they're a system, and he was a guy that never caught on in any of his other NBA stops, and then he goes to
Brett, I saw it firsthand, dude. I root for, yeah, root for him.
Washington. I mean, he was in a few different spots, and he never caught on, and then he goes to the Warriors, and suddenly he's like, you know, based on advanced stats, one of the best players in the league and a super valuable guy, and a guy that ended up getting like a 3-year, $26, $27 million contract from Portland. So, yeah, I mean, you get a guy like that in the right system. Again, it's kind of like what I was talking about with the Phoenix centers. Like, they really take off. And so, you know, I think Gary Payton deserves a ton of credit. I think he is a really good, really valuable player, and I think he's going to be awesome for Portland. But also, maybe because it's the Warriors, because it's a beautiful system, you could plug in somebody into that role, like whether it's, and they're not by any means the same player, but like a DiVincenzo or a Moody, and maybe those guys could really excel. I mean, if you're surrounded by Draymond and Steph and Clay and Jordan Poole. I mean, and Looney even, like, those guys are going to make you look good. And I think, you know, if we could see the best version of Dante DiVincenzo in Golden State, that, like, that could be a hell of a player. I mean, he could be better than Otto or Gary, honestly. I mean, he's a nice player if he's healthy. If they can optimize him, I think he could be fantastic for them, and legitimately make them an even better team. And yeah, and the same with Moody. I mean, who knows? Sky's the limit for that kid. I think Kuminga's awesome. I don't know that he's as far along as some people think, where, like, if you put him in a featured role, you know, you give him too much, he might not be able to handle it quite right yet, but he'll get there. And he's proven that he can be an effective player, at least in relatively small doses, and especially in the regular season. So yeah, I'm high on both those kids. And the Patrick Baldwin Jr. pick, like I think I said at the time, there's no team I would rather seen him go to. Like, this is the perfect situation for him. Yes. There's going to be no pressure on him. His game fits what they do. And yeah, lights out shooter. Like you mentioned, 6'10 wing, basically. You know, he doesn't have like wing athleticism necessarily, but he is an excellent passer in addition to the shooting. And look, man, Golden State's a historically great passing team and a historically great shooting team. Those are his two greatest strengths. And he's got size. I think he could get minutes for them as a rookie. And, you know, I think he projects as the type of guy that could very well be a better NBA player than he was a college player, especially in kind of a strange situation, like you mentioned.
If not for his dad, he would have been at Duke. Like, Duke was, North Carolina. Like,
he was like a top – he was like top five, like, yes. You know, at the beginning of the season. Yes. Like, he was up there with everybody. And, you know, when that shit happens, when a guy's top five coming out of high school – and then they fall to the end of the first round, whether it's, you know, Jaden McDaniels or there's a lot of guys you could point to. I don't give up on those guys. I'm not going to give up on you based on one rough college season. I think that's a foolish thing to do. Cole Anthony, to an extent, you know, he was like a top three, top four guy, and then he fell to like the middle of the first round. So I'm not by any means out on Patrick Baldwin Jr., as disappointing as his college season was. But again, he's the type of guy, too, where like, only certain situations are going to work. Like, if you put him, I don't know, on a bad team where he's like the only floor spacer and you're kind of asked too much of him right away and you don't really prioritize his development, he might not amount to much. But I think in a situation like Golden State, he could actually reach his potential. We'll see. But I loved that pick at 28, I believe. And they drafted a kid in the second round by the name of Gui Santos, Brazilian kid, I believe, who's, I think they got him with the 55th pick. He's a very interesting player. Probably not going to play for them much, if at all, this season, but somebody to keep an eye on down the road. He can really get to the rim, kind of like a big playmaking wing, I guess I would describe him as. And the Looney thing was huge. I thought they might lose him, right? I thought he was going to get, he ended up getting about $7 million a year, $7-8 million a year. I thought he was actually going to command maybe a little bit more than that. And sign with another team. But I think he loves his situation there. I think that's fair value for him. That's kind of a win-win for both sides. So solid offseason, man. Didn't get any worse. Maybe didn't get a whole lot better, but hey, they're the NBA champs. So, like, you know, let's not get
past, baby. Hey, let's talk about another team, man. I am very, very high on this team, if they can stay healthy, the LA Clippers. They had an interesting offseason. I'm going to let you go on. You can take, Brett, as much time as you want to go on this tangent because I know it's just building up inside of you. They signed Zubac. I was looking at the wrong thing. For 3 years at $37 million. They re-signed Rocco. They signed Batum. And go ahead, Brett. I'll let the floor is yours. Talk about your boy that they got in the buyout, the 31-year-old 6'3 point guard from Kentucky. Let's hear it, baby. Let's hear it.
John Wall revenge tour, man, coming to a city near you. No, I do think that John Wall has a lot left in the tank. I thought in that first season back when he was with Houston, I mean, look, he wasn't quite his old self, but he sure looked like it at times. I believe he's only 31 years old, you know, younger than Dame, much younger than Steph, probably closer to Kyrie in age. So he's still relatively young. And just to get him for pretty much nothing, like, you're getting a guy that was all NBA, all star, one of the best point guards in the league, you know, and like a 19-10 guy, like probably close to that for his career.
I don't know. I mean, maybe he's not going to be the Wizards' John Wall. Like, maybe Reggie Jackson will end up being the starting point guard. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. That's kind of an interesting little positional battle, Wall versus Jackson. I think they both have cases. But based on everything I've seen from Wall this offseason, he looks good. And he's got fresh legs, obviously. He hasn't played in forever, but he's been training. You know, it's not like he's been completely out of the public eye. I mean, it's pretty well known that he's been running hoop this whole time. So it's a very low risk, high reward signing, bringing him in. Because even if he doesn't work out at all, or if, God forbid, he gets hurt again, like, you've still got Reggie Jackson. You're still probably the deepest team in the league. And if John Wall can even be like 80% of what he was, then you're just that much better. So yeah, I love that. And above all else, just as like a longtime John Wall fan, ever since I saw him at the Nike Hoop Summit in person in Portland, Oregon, in, I guess it was 2009, I was blown away. He's the most athletic, the fastest player I've ever seen in person. He was unreal. And ever since then, I've been a huge John Wall fan. So honestly, man, to me, above all else, just seeing him back on a basketball court, just the idea of that makes me so happy. It was very frustrating the way that Houston handled him. I understand where they're coming from, I guess. But at the same time, you know, why not just play the guy? You've got him on your team. Maybe he can be kind of a mentor for the younger guys. I don't think it would have hurt, but I'm just glad he's out of Houston. Obviously didn't fit their timeline whatsoever. And now he's on a very legitimate contender with a chance to, if not start, you know, at least play a big role. I think the one thing that they've really lacked over the last few years, really this incarnation of the Clippers, the post Chris Paul Clippers, is passing. I think Batum, you know, bringing him in helped in that regard. He's an excellent passer, but outside of him, they don't have a lot of great passers on that team. John Wall is one of the all-time great passers in NBA history. Make no mistake. And he excels at finding guys on the perimeter. And when you look at the way the Clippers want to play with their outside shooting, he's on paper, he makes a lot of sense. But let me just list their roster here, man. Like, Ivica Zubac, Robert Covington, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, John Wall, Reggie Jackson, Norm Powell, Nick Batum, Luke Kennard, Terrence Mann, Marcus Morris. Like, they are ridiculously deep. I am very, very comfortable in asserting that they are the deepest team in the NBA. Like, their second five would be really a competitive starting five. They're loaded. So this is a team, man, where, God, you know, it's the big if, and the one that we keep saying, but if they're healthy, look the fuck out. Like, they're as talented as any team in the league and deeper than any team in the league, in my opinion.
I agree, man. And we're going to have a lot more to say to them on the season preview pod, but yeah, they're so deep if healthy. Like, this team is loaded. I'm not trying to jinx anything. I'm knocking on wood, but they are absolutely fucking.
But they're gold. Like, they are. And really, what you wanted to see from them was bringing everybody back. Like, those the re-signings that you mentioned, Covington and Batum and Ivica. Like, you just bring everyone back. Get, you know, make sure everyone's healthy, and you do that, and then in addition to that, you bring in a John Wall, you know, a multi-time All-Star. Guy that was on a Hall of Fame trajectory, no doubt, before
they're,
he got.
Yeah, they're a little thin at the center position. I know they did re-sign Zubac, but
maybe
they're going to play a little bit more small ball this year. I don't think just looking at their roster, it's that big of an issue.
No,
and who knows, man? Maybe they sign somebody as the season goes along. There's a lot that can happen.
They did lose Hartenstein on that note.
They did.
Who was an awesome backup center. But honestly, man, like you said, like, if when Zoo's not in the game, they're just going to go small with, like, Morris at center. So, I mean, I think they're – yeah. You know who – I think – did they sign Moses Brown, or am I tripping? Somebody did, but
they did.
I don't know.
They did sign Moses Brown.
I don't know if he's, like, going to even play for them, but I would expect them to just go small with Mook Morris at the five when Ivica's not in the game. Like, you almost don't need two, like, traditional centers in today's NBA. I think as long as you have one, you're good. They're just so deep. And they're going to go small. They're going to go five out with Morris at the center. Like, that's what they like to do. That's what Ty Lue likes. That's going to be their playing style. They've had a lot of success with that. So at full strength, I mean, I think they're as much a title contender as anybody.
I agree, speed. Man. I could not agree more, and I cannot wait to talk to them on our offseason preview.
Hell yeah.
Next team. Oh, God, I don't even want to talk about this next team, but here we go.
Thanks.
Here we are. The LA Lakers.
Oh, the obviously, Lakers. Yeah.
The big news. Hey, this is big news for them. They did sign LeBron James to a 2-year, $97 million contract extension. They did sign Lonnie Walker to the mid-level. They did sign Juan Toscano-Anderson. They did lose Malik Monk. This team is clearly just banking on them being healthy. They did also get a new head coach, my guy, Darvin Ham. Shout out to Bucks and Six. I don't know, man. I guess it's got to be a good offseason if you got LeBron James to commit to 2 more years, although I think that just might be the location more so than the team. But, yeah, I don't know. We're going to talk a lot. I'm sure we're going to talk a lot more about this team when the regular season picks up in our offseason preview. But it's just, I don't know, sure. I really there's not a lot that I really want to say on them. Sure. I don't know. They solid. They got LeBron to sign. He's on the same years as Anthony Davis is now. Lonnie Walker, kind of like it, kind of don't like it. I know he's a career 34% shooter from three. Last year he shot 31%. I like Juan Toscano-Anderson, what he's going to bring to that team. I don't know, Brett. What the fuck do you think, man? It's still going to be Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James. I don't know. Sure. Solid offseason, I guess.
I like their offseason. I really did. Yeah, it's not like the most spectacular offseason. I think a lot of people would have liked to have seen them be able to trade Russell Westbrook. That didn't happen. But so I think considering
he ain't walking through that door, baby. He ain't walking through that door.
I think considering the sort of self-inflicted constraints that they've had to deal with, they had a pretty nice offseason. They're not the most flexible team, but when you look at Lonnie Walker for $6 million, the mid-level, and Thomas Bryant for pretty much nothing. Damian Jones, who was with the Kings last season, is kind of an interesting backup big. I like him. You know, he's a little raw. I think I've described him as perma raw in the past. He's just always going to be like that. But at the same time, like he's a very big dude that can protect the rim. He moves his feet pretty well laterally on switches, and he's a legitimate vertical threat out of the pick and roll. As far as backup centers go, you could do a lot worse than Damian Jones. I kind of like him. Seems like a really nice kid, really positive presence on the court too. So he's a guy I always root for. And then Troy Brown Jr., who was with the Bulls last season, still super young. Like I think he's still only like 22, something crazy. Feels like he's been around for a while, but a guy that's always had some intriguing potential as like a playmaking forward, almost like a point forward, but has never really lived up to it. But he's a solid defender. And then, yeah, Juan Toscano-Anderson from the Warriors. Like I would say in terms of their free agent signings, like they're all relative bargains in my opinion. And the thing that it gives them is they get younger, you know? So if you look at say like these guys' equivalents last season, right? Like Avery Bradley, Wayne Ellington, fucking Trevor Ariza. You know what I mean? Like these are kind of the equivalent. So like those players, like those roles on the Lakers, aside from, you know, they obviously did lose Malik Monk, but like overall they got younger with these free agent signings. Lonnie's young, Thomas Bryant's young, Damian Jones is pretty young, Troy Brown Jr. is young. So they got younger, they got more athletic, and I think that's something that they needed. Like I think last year they were just too old. Like what you're counting on, like Wayne Ellington and Trevor Ariza and like Avery Bradley, like these guys are washed. So it's nice to have some young guys there. I don't know, I think Lonnie's going to have a nice season. I think he could sort of approximate what Monk did for them last season. Again, different player, but could have a similar role in terms of size. And hey, man, he's a guy that I've always been super high on. I've been pulling for him to find a new situation, and this is something he wanted, it looks like. And, you know, I think he could have a breakout year, something along the lines of what Monk did last season with the Lakers. So I could see kind of a similar resurgence with him. He's fun. He could be a major bargain at that price. So, yeah, look, man, not the most spectacular, but solid crop of young, athletic, kind of interesting free agents, good values. And then I'm a big fan of the Darvin Ham hire. Again, we don't know what he's going to be like as a head coach. But when a guy is so highly regarded as an assistant, there's sufficient reason to believe he's going to be a good head coach. Like he's been kind of next in line for a long time, a guy that's been talked about a lot. And that's not for no reason. And I think they made a solid draft pick with Max Christie in the second round out of Michigan State. Young probably won't do anything for them this year, but down the road, he could be a guy that pays off. Could be a nice value in round two. So, look, we'll get into what we think of them as a team on the preview. There's so much to say, but in terms of their offseason, I liked it. I might be in the minority there, or at least I think I'm more excited about it than most people were, but I like it. I think it's a solid offseason.
I agree, man. It was fine. I don't think it wowed you. I don't think it didn't wow you, and they're just banking on Anthony Davis and LeBron to be healthy. I know they had a very, very, you know, record-wise, they had a rough year last year. I believe they were 33-49. They didn't even come close to the plan. But, you know, if those guys can stay healthy, they'll be fine. But we will talk more about them when it comes to the offseason preview. I think their season preview. I think that they'll be just fine. All right, buddy. You ready to talk about the last team here?
Now we get to the Kings.
The biggest Kings fan I know, Manpreet. Let's go, Sacramento. Let's go. Always rooting for you guys. You guys lost Court DeFoyer to the Lakers, but that's all right. Or to the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors, but that's okay. I love their draft, man. I love Keegan Murray. I love, love, love them. I love that they got Malik Monk. I love Kevin Huerter. I actually weirdly like this team, Brett. I like this team, dude. I think that they could be in the play-in. I like their offseason. I'm a little surprised that they didn't re-sign Dante, but that's neither here nor there. They had to give up a little bit to get Kevin Huerter, but I like their team, man. I have no problem with their offseason whatsoever.
Yeah, no, man, I'm kind of with you. I like their offseason a lot, and I didn't like the Halliburton trade, but that's in the past. We're just talking about this past history. I mean, it could work out okay for them. I really don't like it. I don't quite get the reasoning behind it. But hey, it already happened, and we're just talking about this summer. And as far as that goes, I think they've done a couple of really nice things. Wow. Yeah, bringing in Huerter from Atlanta for Justin Holiday and Mo Harkless in a future first is nice. Huerter's an awesome player. I think he's going to open some eyes this season. Sometimes that's all it takes. It's not that he wasn't really good in Atlanta. He was, but sometimes, you know, guys will get more attention when they're in a new situation. Like, you know, open more eyes. I think that could happen with him this season. And then Monk, obviously, we saw what he did with the Lakers last season. And for them to get him at 2 years, 19-20, whatever it was, that seems like a pretty good value to me. Super athletic, super young, can really shoot the ball. Yeah, I think he's still just a little bit tainted by like his off the court stuff. Otherwise, I feel like he'd be worth more money than that. But you know, I all indications are that he's good. He's on the right track. He was awesome, I thought, for the Lakers last season. One of their few bright spots. So yeah, bringing in Huerter and Monk, man, is that's a big upgrade on the wings. And then yeah, Murray looks great. You know, it's
the draft pick. Summer League MVP.
The fact that he was drafted over Ivy was obviously a little bit of a head scratcher at the time to most people, but everything he's shown since, like in summer league, he looked awesome. And I think that's a fine pick there. So they did get Bucks legend Sam Merrill.
They did NBA champion Bucks legend Sam Merrill. And I believe, dude, they just signed another NBA champion, Matthew Dellavedova.
I cannot believe he's back in the NBA. Like, I just wrote him off. Like, okay, like he had a good run. He's probably doing his thing in the NBL. Like, I don't even know where he is, but I just never would have expected to see him in the NBA again. Because he's not a young guy anymore. And I don't know, but they brought him in. Championship experience between him and Sam Merrill. A couple of really exciting young two guard/small forwards in Monk and Huerter, and then what looks like a great pick in Keegan Murray. So yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think they're probably a play-in team. Like, I probably have them, I don't know, 10 in the West, maybe 11 at the lowest. We'll think more about that on our preview, but I think they've put themselves in a position to like if that's their goal, right? Like, if that's their goal is to just get in the playoffs, which honestly, man, is understandable at this point because the drought is just like the ultimate elephant in the room. It's almost like the primary association. Generally speaking, when the Kings are brought up, it's like they haven't made the playoffs since like 07, or like I was this old when, or so-and-so wasn't born yet the last time they made the playoffs, like however you want to phrase it. It's become like a thing and it's kind of like gaining steam exponentially. And like, they really do just kind of need to make the playoffs, just get that monkey off their back. And I think perhaps that they've put themselves in a position to to have a shot at doing that. Like I said, I didn't like the Halliburton move. There's, you can look at pretty much all their draft picks before him, and there's a lot to not like about what this organization has done over the last decade plus. But when you look at the roster as it stands today, I think they've got enough to make a little run at the playoffs. So, you know, we'll see. But if I'm a Kings fan, I'm pretty excited because this is the best team you've had in a while. There's no doubt about that.
You know what, though? Like, let's just be optimistic for a minute here. What if De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis are really, really good? Like, let's just say that duo is a legit duo.
You should only They are legit.
Like, what I'm talking about is, all right, these are our two solid guys, and you know that you're a playoff team with those two guys. I mean, like, what if they are like that?
It's possible.
Kevin Herter, who can shoot. Harrison Barnes is still very solid. And let's just say Keegan Murray this year finishes top three in Rookie of the Year. Like that, they again, they're starters. I think they need to address their depth a little bit. I like Davion Mitchell. I like Malik Monk. I'm a little bit unsure about their other guys, especially their frontline guys. But they're starting five, and it's legit. Like, that is a legit starting five.
So what are we looking at? Fox, Herter,
Barnes, Keegan Murray, Domantas Sabonis.
Yeah, I feel like Monk and Herter should be a position battle. But, like, yeah, man, so that's a solid starting lineup. But then, yeah, you look at the backups. You have Rashawn Holmes, one of the better backup bigs in the league. If he's a backup, I mean, he's a starting caliber big. There's no doubt about that. And then Davion Mitchell, who, I mean, off the bench, is kind of a backup PG.
We might be sleeping on them a little bit. I don't know how high they're going to go. I still think I'm with you. We'll talk about it more in the preview. I think they're going to be fighting for a play-in. I think it would take a lot for them to maybe.
Well, who's going to be like, let's just mini preview, but like teams that will probably be below them would be the Rockets, OKC, I think Utah for sure, and I think San Antonio for sure. So that would put them at 11. So and look, man, like I always say, like there's going to be some shit luck that these other teams experience. Like they could very, very well be the 10 seed and at least get in the play-in. And then who knows, man, anything can happen in the play-in. That's the beauty of it. So, yeah, I think they're a realistic play-in team, kind of a long shot playoff team, but it's certainly not out of the question. Like I said, I think this is the best team that they've had maybe since the last time they made the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was alluding to, is I think that you're correct. And if you look at them, very, very early on, like you said, there's a lot of injury luck, a lot of shit that's going to happen. I think right on paper right now, you could just say the Utah Jazz are not making the playoffs based on their roster. It's probably going to be more of a fire sale as the offseason goes on. And they were the fifth seed. They won 49 games last year. Can the Clippers stay healthy? San Antonio is probably going to tank. We just talked about the Lakers. Can they stay healthy? We also got your other team, Portland. What are they going to look like with a healthy Dame? And then you have – and Sacramento actually last year finished three games ahead of Portland in the standings. So, like, they're kind of right there. Like, they're just going to be a really interesting team. And I'm generally saying this, especially for my guy, man. I cannot wait to watch the Sacramento Kings. I really can't. Like,
I'll say this. Fox was unbelievable after the trade.
He was, dude. Like,
what, so, like, that's kind of like, okay, what if, maybe.
What if Fox and Sabonis are like those two teams where, like, going forward, we can pencil them in to the playoffs?
It might be. We just, you know what I mean? We haven't seen that much of them as a duo, but like, I wouldn't rule that out, man. Like, Sabonis he's an excellent player. There's some questions, but like defensively, but he is an excellent, excellent offensive player, rebounder. And, you know, if their chemistry is what it looked to be at times last season, like they might really have something, but I think Fox's play alone, I could see how that could justify the trade. In the minds of a lot of people, the way he played after Halliburton was shipped out. I forget his numbers, but it was pretty insane. So if he can be at that level next season and Sabonis can do his, I mean, I don't know, they could be pretty good, man. I really like them on paper. I really do. I'll think more about it and watch more of their film from the second half of last season before we do a preview. But right now, yeah, I think play-in is entirely realistic for this team. I think their fans would be stoked even just to get into the play-in, like something, just something at this point.
Yeah, dude, I'm with you. And it's going to be – I cannot wait. We have one more division preview to go. Obviously, it's the big one, but that's neither here nor there. And we will – I can't wait to get into these previews about the upcoming season, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. a lot of fun. We're going to probably do a little bit longer podcast. You might get us at, you know, 90, 120 minutes here, but it's going to be worth it. I promise you. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And that closes the book on the Pacific Division in the Western Conference. And we have one more to go, the Central Division. I can't imagine what we're going to talk about in that division. But all right, man, dude, for myself and Brett, we appreciate you guys listening, and we will talk to you guys next week.